Poker Talk World. Today's Daphne is Sechet Chulin. Brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh is Dav Tzadichet, and we're holding right at the bottom of Tzadi Zayin Amud Beit. And what we had last read was Reb Nachman. And the last part of Reb Nachman's psak was that an egg, he was going through different shiurim, and he said, well, an egg, which I assume needs an egg of an unkosher kind of bird, that falls into a pot of boiling eggs, is b'shishim, so 60 against that egg, the ein beitza min haminyan, so that the total would be 61. Amalei b'vidi baravin habaye, I don't get this case at all, Reb Nachman, because as far as I know, eggs don't actually impart any taste to water. You boil up eggs in water, raw eggs in water, right? The water doesn't taste like anything. As a matter of fact, it's even sort of the way that people refer to tasteless things is they call it egg water. When somebody wants to say something is without any taste, they say it's just like water that you boiled eggs in. So that was the expression that they had about a soup that was tasteless. You know, instead of saying it tastes like dishwasher, they would say it tastes like egg water. Okay, but I mean, that obviously evolved as a saying because that's the fact. Amalei Abaye, we're not talking about an egg that is not kosher. We're talking about an egg that has an efroach in it. Now, that means, as we saw before, it doesn't matter whether it's a kosher egg or a non-kosher egg because an immature bird is considered to be a nevela if it's dead. And you can't check it. So basically, once it starts growing an embryo in that egg, it is actually meat. So if it's giving taste, it's not giving egg water taste, it's giving taste of the meat that's inside of it. So therefore, we treat the entire thing as a chefza viser. So what are you saying? You're saying that in the event that it would be a non-kosher species egg, that then you wouldn't need to worry about it at all, and there wouldn't have to be a bittel because it doesn't give any taste? Take a look at this braita. It seems to be saying exactly the opposite. Here it says, Beitzim teholot, shishokane beitzim tmeod. Now, this is pretty clear that the words tohorot, tmeot, I mean, those are the words that we use for kosher species and non-kosher species, right? So if it's talking about kosher eggs mixed with non-kosher species eggs, and it says it all depends on the taste. Im yesh behem benot in tam, kulam asirot. So obviously, it doesn't say anything about having dead embryos inside. So apparently, it's not true. Eggs do, mitzad ha'alocha, they do actually give over taste. It says, well, you're right that it does use the word tamei v'tohar, but it's because it has an embryo in it. This is a borrowed term. Why do we refer to it as if it's a non-kosher species? Because the very fact that it has a chick in it means that it wouldn't matter whether it is a kosher species or non-kosher species. It's about as unkosher as you can get because it has an avela in it. But wait a minute. Continue reading that braita, and you'll see that that doesn't make sense. Because the end of the braita says, Beitzim shishelakan v'nimtza efroach b'achat mehen. If you cooked eggs, and they were all kosher eggs, and one of these eggs turns out when you opened it up, it had an actual embryo in it. So, if it gives over the taste, of course it's going to be asur. But anyway, if that's what the end of the braita says, it can't be the same case as the beginning of the braita. It's ridiculous. So that means that if you're introducing the concept of a dead embryo in the cooked egg, only in the seifa, then that means that the ratio was talking about when it said tamei tahor, it meant what it said. It meant tamei tahor, which means that the braita is telling you that an egg does give over a tam. So I don't understand it. I mean, there is that popular saying, it doesn't come from nowhere. Well, actually, the last part of the braita is an explanation of the first part of the braita. So the way to read the braita is like this. Pirushi kumefarish. You read the first part. Beitzim tahorot shishalakanim beitzim tmei'o t'miyesh b'menotetam kulon asuro. Now, the Braita has to explain to you, but what do I mean? I don't want you to make the mistake of thinking that a taste of just a regular plain egg that is from a non-kosher species is a problem. It isn't. What we're talking about over here is not about kosher species and non-kosher species. Cade said, what do I mean? I mean a bird, an egg that you find a bird in. The Braita is just making it very clear by repeating the case in other words in the Seifa so that we should know what the case is. And that's very reasonable. I mean, I know you think it sounds a little bit pushed, but it's not. Because Achinami Mistavra. Much more reasonable to read this Braita as a Seifa that's explaining the ratio. Because if you read it linearly and you think it's talking about two different cases, it doesn't make much sense. Because why would we need the Seifa if we've already said the Resha? In other words, Isa Kadaita, if you really believe that the Resha is talking about a non-kosher species and it's not talking about a chick, so then if you're telling me that even without a chick, an egg does present a problem of tam, and you would need shishim to be mevatel it, which is a big chiddush because people think that there's no taste at all. So do I really need to tell you that if there's a chick in it? That, I mean, that's rather obvious, isn't it? Because it's argued that the ratio doesn't let be a froach, then any fool can understand. Look, if ashta the let be a froach asura, if an egg is usur just because of its nearly tasteless mixture, so if that's the case, do I really need to tell you that if it had an embryo and it had an nevela, that it's, I mean, that would be obvious. So why would I repeat it? So it's very reasonable to say that actually the Braita is just explaining itself. I'm telling you the case, Tohar Tameh, and then I repeat the case. In other words, what I mean is, in other words, a Beitza with an Efroach. That makes much sense, I think. Well, it does make sense, but you certainly can't use it as a proof. Can't say, oh, I mean, Stavra, because it would make sense in another way. Because imishumar lo aria, don't look at that as being actually a strong indication. Because sometimes we have the concept of a Braita or a Mishnah that will state an additional case in order to clarify that the original case was actually not this case. Right? So you'll say, ah, so apparently the Resha was referring to a Beitza without an Efroach. And it meant Tamei Vitar literally in terms of the species. That is called Tana Sefer Legilui Resha, that the second case is there in order to clarify what was meant by the first case. Don't think, Shalom Tomar, don't think that the Resha, I know what you guys are thinking, the Resha you're going to say was only borrowed terminology. And when we said it's Tamei or Tar, what we really meant, does it have an Efroach in it? No, no, no. If I want to talk to you about an Efroach, I'll talk to you about an Efroach. Watch me do it. And then we give the second case. Here's a case of a Beitza with an Efroach. So that makes it very clear that the original case is not a case with an Efroach. So, I mean, it's just as likely that the structure of the Braita is a structure of Tana Sefer L'Giluyei Resha as it is Tana Sefer L'Firushei Resha, right? So you can't prove it, but I hear what you're saying. So Tana Sefer L'Giluyei Resha, Shelo Tomar Resha is talking about where there's an Efroach. But if it wouldn't be for that, it would be kosher. Therefore, I tell you, here's a case of an Efroach. What do you think the first case was? Mechal de Resha de Letba Efroach. And even so, it's Osir, and it's not true. The popular saying is not true. La Locha, a Beitza actually is considered to be a Nosin Tan. Now, in terms of the gradual development of this halacha of shishim, which we said yesterday is something that took some time until the time of the Amoraim to actually end up with a strict definition that we wouldn't have to analyze each case on its merits, and now we'd have to call a chef who's a non-Jew to taste it and so on. So there we took the din of taima as being very literal. And we even had ways of modeling it so that we had the case of the Gitanasha would be possible lefet, and we had other cases, which would be like an onion or a leek, and so on. Okay, but as we said, things developed. And this next piece in the Gemara is talking about that period during which the Shir of the Shishim was already being spoken about and applied in certain cases, but it hadn't yet been kavua. So there were different analyses in which the various Talmidei Chachamim were attempting to find a baseline for how it is that we should generally look at the process of Bita. So there was a case in which a Gezeisa de Tarba, Nafal B'tikula de Bizer. So a Gezeisa of Chelev fell into a pot of meat, and they brought it to Rav Ashi to ask him what the din is. So Sever Rav Ashi is the change of it. Here's a Sever Rav Ashi, the Shiure B'mayt V'latikula. So first of all, Rav Ashi wanted to take into consideration, even though the mixture had been brought before him as it was at that moment. So he said, okay, I mean, we said before that when we were talking about the Shishim Shir, so remember we said that it was neged all of the contents and even of the pot itself. So we spoke about the Rotav and we spoke about the Kippah and even the actual Kedira and so on. So, okay, so he wanted to utilize the Kedera as a certain amount of the Shishim. So let's say, if he wouldn't have taken into consideration the thickness of the pot, which is quite significant, he would have only had, let's say, 59 instead of 60. So he said, but I can add the pot, because the taste of the Isser went into the pot, and so that would add an additional one part at least, you know. So now I have 60. And he was going to use the pot in order to be mevatel the Isser as it was presented to him. So the Rabbanan, meaning his Talmidim, they said to Rav Ashi, does that make sense? I mean, Atu, Dehatera Bola, Deisura Lo Bola. Now this was the Gemara that Rashi brought earlier to point out that in practical terms, when you get a Shaila, the issue of the pot is simply irrelevant, because by the time you get the question, unless you actually saw the precise amount that fell in and you can measure the difference between what was absorbed. Normally, when a pot is brought before you, the pot has been absorbing everything in the pot, both the Isser and the Heter on a prorated basis. So therefore, the Rabbanan said, what is the point that you're making? I don't understand. Is this pot Maxwell's demon or something? It knows only to be Bolea, those things that are Heter. So now you can use it to be Mevato the Isser. You think that it wasn't Mevato, it wasn't absorbing a proportionate amount of Isser? I mean, it just absorbed the mixture. So how can you add it to change the proportions? It's an extension of the same proportions. And this is why Rashi said that for all intents and purposes, you can ignore the pot, because after all, the pot is absorbing on a prorated basis. So after that, terabola di sura lo bola, it does make sense. So therefore, you have to look at the mixture as it's brought in front of you, and you can actually ignore the pot. So there was another case in which only a half a kezayit of chelev fell into this boiling pot of meat. Now, question is, again, before we define this as being across the board, shishim is the shear. So Mar Bar Rav Ashi felt that if you're talking about only a chatzi shear, so you don't have a whole kezayit. So in the same way that you only have a chatzi shir, and he thought that chatzi shir was only osur min rabbanan, so you can use a chatzi shir, so to speak, to be mevatel it. So if you've got a chatzi shir, normally the full shir of a kezayit would require 60 kezesim against it, right, in order for it to be kosher. But if it's only a chatzi shir, then we should be able to get along with half of that. So 30 chatzis asim should be enough to be mevato one chatzis zayin. And I don't need 30 full zayin. You see? That was his logic. Now, the question is, do we have to call an ambulance for Moshe Reuven? It seems the bear left only his clothes and ate the rest because he hasn't been there for a long time. Ah, phew. Yeah, that was scary, man. Okay, good to have you back. Looks like it got your tent pretty bad. Anyway, so his father, Ravashi, said to him, how many times have I told, Lav amina lecha, lo tizalzel b'shir nirabonan? Just because this is new stuff, this has to be treated with absolute seriousness. This is not wishy-washy stuff. If the Rabbanan gave over, currently, a shear of 60, that shear of 60 is not up to you to play games with because you think, well, this isn't really, man. That's not how it works. This is a regular shear de Rabbanan. That's the first thing, my son, that you did wrong. And the second thing that you did wrong is that this is a D'oraisa. It's not a Rabbanan. So first of all, I told you, don't play games with the shear of the Rabbanan. Next thing you're going to be saying is you only have to wait 5 hours instead of 6. I'm kidding. Okay. So anyway, I told you, right? And furthermore, we are not talking about a Rabbanan. Ha'omer Rabbi Yochanan, this Chachi Shear is Aser Min HaTorah. And we learned that out by Chelev, of Kol Chelev. When it says in the Pesuk the extra word, what does it mean? Kol Chelev. Loto chelev. All chelev means even a chatzis shear. So therefore, you were wrong on every count. You need shishim keneged a chatzis shear. Obviously, shishim chatzis shear keneged a chatzis shear. Omer Shemin bar Ava, Omer Vidi bar Idi bar Gershon, Omer Levi bar Parta, Omer Rabbi Nachum, Omer Rabbi Biryon, Mishum Zaken Echad. So we get all of these names, but in the end, we don't really know who said this, but somebody. It must be somebody important because his name is Rabbi Yaakov. If you don't know who that is, we did. So Rabbi Yaakov Shmi. And what he said was that in the Beit HaNasi, in Rabbi's Bayi, they used to be noheg that if an egg that was osir was cooked in 60, it's osir. Now, it's not clear what he means. It's 60 parts against the egg or 60 in the total mixture with the egg. We're going to talk about that in a moment. So, beitza b'shishim is osir. But if it's a beitza in shishim v'achat, that could mean 61 keneged it or 61 total, there it's mutter. So Rabbi Zera was not impressed with this long list of authorities that Reb Shammah bar Abba had quoted over here, because he said, you know, Amar Rabbi Zera Reb Shammah bar Abba, the way that you did this was inappropriate, because when you said the halacha like that, it's very easy to understand the words that you are saying, that a total mixture of 61, where one of them is an usher egg, the total mixture is mutter. That would mean 62-1, right? Okay, now the thing is, that may be your opinion, and you may have said it that way because you figured if people understand it that way, well, that's just fine because there's nothing wrong with that. But the truth is that the Shnei Gedolei HaDor that were asked about this, and they were not ready to say what you are implying. I mean, albeit you're just implying it, but you have a responsibility to give over the halacha as we actually knew it or as we actually didn't know it. Meaning, if there was a suffix in the statement, then you should have made it very clear that you don't necessarily mean one out of 61. Maybe you mean 61-1. Because the truth is that there were two Gedolei HaDor, and I'm referring to Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi and Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, and both of them had quoted Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, and they said, Beitzim, a Beitza in 60 is Osir, And in 61, it's mut. And we asked them, what do you mean in? Do you mean in a total mixture, or do you mean 61-2-1? The bilo. So we asked them, do you mean a 61 mixture, including the ulcer egg, which would be 60-1? Or do you mean a 61-2-1, besides the egg, which would be a total of 62? Now, they said they don't know. The low portion. So that they weren't sure. And again, at this particular point, we didn't know exactly whether 60 that was this year. And you say it over as if you don't mind if people understand it to be just 60-1. And you say it over as if you do know. And that is very inappropriate. You should have said, but it's not clear whether this means it includes the ulcer egg or not. But, I mean, who are you to determine the matter after the Shnei Gedolei Hadar said, we don't know? Itma. Halacha l'maisa. Rav Chalbo said that Ravuna said that if you're talking about an egg needs to be 61-1, not 60-1. Now, there are two very different approaches to why that would be true. The simplest approach is the Ramban's approach. And that is, every egg is a different size. So you can't simply utilize egg to 60 eggs because those 60 eggs may not be 60 times the amount of that egg. So because of that, when it came to eggs, which people tend to view as, okay, an egg is an egg and is an egg, but it isn't. And therefore, the Chazal were koveh 61 to make certain that we know what we're talking about and that we actually have 60. The Rambam has it as an actual difference in the fundamental way in which we treat the egg. And that is because since this idea of an egg, turned out that we're only talking about an egg with an embryo in it, right? So because of the fact that this is an entire birya of a nevela, Chazal were machmer on it to make you more aware of the fact that this is actually a birya, and it's not just a question of a shear of a kisayat that you're eating and so on, but it's an actual nevela that you're eating. And because of that, they added this to make it more an issue of awareness. Now, so this guy comes before Rabbi Gamliel Bar Rebbe to ask him about something that had gotten mixed. And again, this was before we were koveya, the total din of being 60 under ulcer, and in all circumstances. And before we go any further in the discussion, there's a major difference between Rashi and Tosfos in how we deal with this shishi. Tosfos learns it the way that we learn it, la halacha. But 60 is the shear without needing to determine any further about whether there is a tam, whether there's not a tam, and therefore 60 takes the place of all of the elements of the tasting issues that we talked about earlier. And Rashi learns that the din of Shishin, and he has many rayas from the Pashtus of the Sugya, which Tosfos has to handle at the end in order for us to see the whole thing. And I'm introducing it now because, as we're going to see, sure seems that Rashi was right from the way we learned the Sugya, and that the shear of Shishin only kicks in if we know that there's no taste. And therefore, basically, the idea of Shishin is a chumrah, or it's something that you can rely on when you have no other information. But if you know for a fact that there is a taste, so then how would Chazal say that if it's shishim, it's okay, there's still a taste there? According to Tosfos, the idea is that the definition of what is called a taste was given by Chazal as shishim. Obviously, there may be some detection of like a slight variation in the tam of a thing because something fell into it. I mean, any real connoisseur is going to be able to taste things that are going to affect on some level. The question is that called a taste of Isser? So according to Tosfos, Shishim takes the place of anything that would have to do with time. According to Rashi, shishim is an additional requirement or if no other choice requirement. Okay, so now getting that, putting that in the background, let's talk about some of the history of the development of this shir. So a guy comes to Rabbi Gamliel Bar Rebbe, and he had a mixture that had 45 against one. And he asked him, could I be matir this in 45? And Rabbi Gamliel said to him, look, my father was Rebbe. He would not get out on a limb to be matir, somebody once asked him, about a case where there was 47 times as much. And he said, I can't be that maker. So if he wasn't ready to be matir 47 to 1, how am I going to go and say that 45 is okay? I mean, that's outrageous. My father didn't have the guts to say it was 45. So it's 47, and I'm going to say 45. So again, this was part of the development of the shir, you see. There was another maysa, and this was not with Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi's son, but Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi's son. And Rabbi Shimon, this guy had come, and he had only 43. And Rabbi Shimon said to him, I know that my father, Rabbi, would not have actually even be semech on 45, and you expect me to do 43? No way. Who does the kami to Rabbi Chia? And he asked him, can I be mevatel this? And Rabbi Chia looks at him and says, hey man, you don't got 30 here. Now, all that Rabbi Chia meant was, are you nuts? You're bringing me something like this where there's not even 30 to 1 and you expect me to be matir it? But it sounded like he was saying, you don't got 30 here, meaning, but if you had 30 here, I would have been matir. Is that what you mean? Time of the leka shloshim? Did Rabbi Chia really mean that it's only because he didn't have 30? But if he did have 30, would Rabbi Chia been ready to be matir it? No, all that he meant was a guzma. He said, you don't even have 30. What are we talking about? But that doesn't mean he would have been matir if it was 30. He was just saying, this is ridiculous. Okay, so what we've been talking about over here is relying on these various shiurim. And we know that the din of shishim was something that was only at the time of the Gemara that they ended up coming up with mamish towards the end of the time of the Gemara. But earlier on, it was not at all clear. So Amrib Chibar Avam Rabbi Shimon Levi Mishum Bar Karpora, Kol Yisurim Shebatorah B'Shishim. So here Bar Karpora was quoted as saying that there's this din of Shishim. Amar Lefanav Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yitzchak. So Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yitzchak said to Rabbi Chibar Avam Rabbi, Hatom Merkei, you are claiming that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was semech on Bar Karpora who held that it's Poto B'Shishim. I have another version of what Bar Kapora held, and that was, Kol Yisurin Shebatera B'me'ah. So here the question is, what exactly did Bar Kapora say? So according to Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Bar Kapora was actually the earliest version that we have of Bito Bin Chal and Shishim. And Ravasi said that Bar Kapora didn't say that. He said it was the Maya. So again, if we cannot taste it, and this is Rashi's Parsha, and you have Shishi, or and you have Maya, depending on which Bar Kapora we hold on, so then it could be both. So that means that the Rabbanan were very machmir by adding these additional shiurim. Now, what we're going to see now is the earliest version of shishim and mea in which we look to Mekeres in the Torah for coming up with a shishim and mea. And in that case, indeed, it may well be that it was only a chumrah, as Rashi points out. So this is a very early way of understanding the dinim of bittul, that we look to examples in the Torah where there was addressing the question of bit. So we're going to see some fascinating cases in which the Torah itself talks about bit. Where is that? Shneim lo lemadu ela mizra b'shela shel nazir. So remember, there's a very curious place in which one of the korbanos of the nazir is the shlomi, which is known as the El Nazir. Now, one of the strange requirements of the El Nazir is that, besides that you're supposed to put the hair of the Nazir underneath it and so on, is the din that you're supposed to take the zrua that was cooked in the pot. That's what it seems to be saying. It was cooked in the pot with that korban shlamim, which is the El Nazir, and you give it to the kohen. So it says over there, "Dektiva lakacha kohen et hazroa b'shela." So the Torah is supposed to take the zroa b'shela itself, and he then uses that. That's called a truma, and he then goes ahead and he eats it as truma. But how, if that's the case, how is the nazir, or how is a regular Yisrael, allowed to eat the El Nazir? The El Nazir is a regular shlami that anybody can eat. And here it was cooked together with truma, because the zroa b'shela of the aisle is truma. And the Torah says that, nonetheless, this is the way to do it. So what does that imply? V'tanya. So we had a machlokas about how to understand that pasuk. So the Brisa says like this. The Tanna Kamma says the word b'shela means that it is whole. Tosu says, how does b'shela mean whole? So he says, well, if you read b'shela as if the lamed has a dagesh and the hey is a mapikay, so then the way to read it is b'shela, right? Which would mean cook it. But wherever we have a cook it, it means it as it is shlema. Rashi says, I don't know. So Rashi was looking for an actual language in which the word b'shela meant whole. He says, I don't know any language what that means, but Tosfos explains it's a way of being derish the pasuk. Okay, in any event, the Tanna Kamma holds that it has to be whole. Now, if it has to be whole, then that means that the kohen was taking off the zroa, he was cutting off the zroa from the animal that had been cooked whole. And Reb Shimon bar Yochai, who argues, still says that b'shela means that it was cooked together with the ayah. That's all that it means. Now, but that means that both of them, both the Tanna Kamma and Reb Shimon bar Yochai, they both hold that the zroa is cooked together with the ayah, right? The only question seems to be that the Tanna Kamma holds b'chatech lo avadam evashala. So that if what you do is that you cut and then you cook it together at the same time, it means that you put it not literally whole attached, but it's together with. So the whole machlokas over here is that when it says to do, it means to take it while it's still attached, and that is exactly what the machlokas is. But other than that, everybody seems to be perfectly happy with the idea that it is certainly in the same pot, right? So that means that it's going to be giving a tam, and shlema simply means that it's not cut up into pieces. That's the way this first pshat has it. Or you could look at it that everybody agrees that it is cut off and then cooked. And the difference is it cooked together with the rest of the shlamim in the same pot or not? So Ibai Seim in the Kuli, Amma Mechatech Lavarim Mevashala, Miumar Sover Bahare Ayel Mevashala. So one man, the Omar, holds that you cook it together, and one man, the Omar, holds you put it in a different pot. So now, according to the first Lashon, everybody agrees. So Ali Badalishna Kama. If you're going, that means that kule alma, everybody is made of that. It's absorbing the taste while it's cooking. because it's definitely in the same pot, right? And if you have the second lashon where the machlokas is, was it in the same pot? But nonetheless, according to Rav Shimon bar Yochai, we took truma, that is usher to a zar, it's only mutter for a kohen, we cooked it together in the same pot with the shlamim, and then the people can eat the shlamim. Now that means that you are mevatel it. So that means that the Torah is telling us that you can be mevatel this in shishim. So man diyomar b'shishim, so what then is the machlokas? The machlokas of the two versions of bar kapara is whether we look only at the meat in the zroa, keneged the meat in the rest of the animal. Well, that would yield a much higher percentage of kosher to non-kosher because there's very little meat in the arm. It's almost all bone. Or do we look at the entire organ? So man diyomar b'shishim sovar, you have to measure everything, the basar and the atzamot, against the basar and the atzamot of the entire animal, and that would yield 60 to 1. Havila b'shishi. Whereas the version of bar kapara that had 1 in 100, he measures only the amount of meat. He doesn't take into consideration the bone, because he holds that bone is not considered to be usr and to be asring b'nei sintan. So man diyomar b'meya sovar basar b'ari basar m'sha'arinan. We only look at the amount of meat, and there's very little meat in a leg, in a foreleg. So he holds, you look only at the basar, and therefore you've got 100 times more basar in the animal as a whole than you have in one arm. But both of them are meida that the mukar is in the pasik of zroa b'shela. Now, question is, can we really use this pasik as a mukar at all? Do we have a right to learn anything from the case of the zroa b'shela? There's a braita that seems to be saying, and don't think that this could be used as a model because it's an absolutely unique case. What is that? Vatanya. Zehu. This particular case of the fact that zroa b'shela is mutter is unique. And it's the only case that we find in Kol HaTorah Kula of heter habar michlal isur. So that even though something here was usur, because it had the truma in it, the Torah was matir, which means when you say zehu. Zehu means this is the only case. I mean, so what are you telling me? This is opposed to what? Lav lamute kol isurim shebat Torah? Isn't that coming to say, don't use this as a model for being matir isurim? So apparently we're not meant to utilize this pasuk as a basis. Omer Abaye, that business about its being unique, that is necessary, but not the way you think. That was referring to Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. Okay, take out your trusty little crushed trees over there and use a little bit of carbon to make a mark on it and put down the words, min b'mina eloi batil. So this is Rabbi Yehuda's Shita that we have met before. Remember, we talked about Rabbi Yehuda with Ein Dam, Mevatel Dam, but that is a general halacha according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that all of the discussions that we have over here about Bittul is only if we have different things. But if you have the same thing, one of which is kosher and one of which isn't kosher, that's min b'mino. And you cannot be Mevatel the same taste in the same taste. It doesn't cancel it, it just enhances it. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no such thing as being mevatel the zroa in the meat or in the meat of the bones. I don't care how you look at it. You cannot possibly be mevatel the same thing in something that tastes exactly like it. So when the Braita says, oh, and this is unique, it's true. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's so unique that it's a violation of the halacha that he holds all over. And here it's telling me I can actually have a bittul of min b'mino. So it's necessary to say, don't think that you learned from here that min b'mino in general can be bittul. That's not true. We cannot be mevatel min b'mino. But it did not mean what you think, that the idea of the shiur of the bittul is not applicable anywhere else. That's not what it means. So I don't understand. I mean, isn't it a little bit weird for Reb Yehuda to say, well, the Torah says that min b'mino is batel, but it doesn't mean it. This is a unique case. I mean, what would he come out saying then? I mean, the Torah says min b'mino is batel. So for heaven's sakes, sit down in front of the Sefer Torah, Reb Yehuda, and listen to what it's telling you. Maybe you don't like the idea, but don't argue with God. So the Ligmar Mine, why don't we use this according to him and say, you see from here, the min b'mino is batel. Doesn't make sense to say, well, this is a special case. Ah, because we have another source for the din of min b'mino not being batel b'rov. And what is that? Well, this is something that we spoke about back in Zvachim many times. Goli Rachmana. What do we have? Another case. There's one other case in which we deal in the Torah with mixing things, and it's not batel. Torah said on Yom Kippur, at least according to Waman Diyama, that if you're supposed to take midama sa'ir umidama par, you take midama par umidama sa'ir, mix them together. So that's according to the Man Yama holds, we mix the dam before putting the matonis on the mizbeach hapnimi on Yom Kippur. Well, how could you mix them? I mean, hadavar yadua, as Rabbi Yehuda always says, hadavar yadua shedam apar meruba midama sa'ir. So wouldn't the dam asoyer be batel berov in the dam apar? But it's not, because if it were, then the Torah wouldn't be calling it the dam asoyer. So since goli rachmona v'lakach mi dam apar mi dam asoyer, which means tar vayu bahade hadadininu, we've got both of these bloods together, and despite the fact that there's massively more blood in a par than there is in a soyer, and they're not batel. And therefore it's clear that min b'mino is not batel. Therefore, I say min b'mino is not batel, and this case of El Nazir is unique. Well, now, wait a minute. How do I know which one is the model and which one is unique? I mean, you've got two cases in the Torah. One is the mixture of the dam apar and the dam asur. And from there, it appears that min b'mino lo batel. Then you've got another case of the bittul of the shlomim to the zroa b'sheila of that shlomim, which says that min b'mino is batel. So how does Rabbi Yehuda know that we should learn the fact that min b'mino is not batel from Yom Kippur, and that there's a unique case by the El Nazir instead of vice versa? Umay chazita de gamlinon miheich. What makes Rabbi Yehuda use as his model the case of Yom Kippur? Why doesn't he use the case of the Zroa B'Sheila? So leave more behind. Why not use it, this case, as being a case which is the model, and say that min b'mino is batel? Ah, says Rabbi Yehuda, because we have a general rule. The general rule is that when the Torah violates the norm of a halacha, that is called a chiddush. You can't use that chiddush to provide a baseline model, because it's the fact that it's a chiddush that shows you, well, this is obviously sticking out like a sore thumb, and therefore it's not meant to be normative. So how can I use it as a model? And since this is a tremendous chiddush, what is the tremendous chiddush? Because, and this is another thing for you to write down, gentlemen, after your min b'mino lo batel, which is, of course, only a libra de Reb Yehuda, which should be noted, and that is ein mevatlin isur l'chatchila. All of these dinim of bittul is only where it happens. It does not mean that you're allowed to take something usur, make a mixture of it, and now say that it's kosher. And therefore, if you would normally, you would go out to be mevatel b'yisur l'chatchila, you wouldn't be able to be semich on that bittul. And here it says that you're allowed to do such a thing. That's the way the pashtus of the Gemara is. Now, the problem with that pashtus is that there's a machlokas rishonim whether ein mevatlin isur lechatchila is in fact a diaraisa And that when the Torah says not to eat something, it means not to make yourself be able to eat it by putting it into something else, which would be mevatel. So then, ein mevatel isur lechatchila would be a deoraisa. And that would explain why over here we're saying it's a chiddush, because it violates the Torah's own normative halacha, correct? But what if you hold that ein mevatel isur lechatchila is only a chumra derabanan? Then how could you say that this is a chiddush? It's not a chiddush in the Torah. It's only something that the Rabbanan make up later. So they would have to learn that the reason that this is a chiddush is the fact that we never have a case where it's a chiyev to be mevatel. Over here, the Torah is telling you, this is the way to do it. This is the way you're mechuyev to cook it this way, and then to give the Zeruah B'Shela to the Kohen. That is something that, in fact, we never find in Kol HaTorah Kula. So over there, it would be a chiddush in terms of the Diraita, even though it may be that the Ikar Halacha of Ein Mevatlin Yisrael HaTchila is a Drabbanan. Okay, but so remember that that's a Machlokas Rishon. But wait a minute. So then, if it's a chiddush, and Rabbi Yehuda wasn't ready to learn out from this case that Min B'Minayit is Batil, so what right do we have to use it as a model? And I'm so confused. You're saying we were using the case as a model according to both cases of the Shitas of Bar Kappara, right? So Bar Kappara found this to be a model. It's only a machlokas of what is the result of the model. So are we modeling the bittel of the meat of the animal connected, the meat in the leg, in the foreleg, or are we being mevato the entire foreleg, including all of the bone and so on, against the entire animal? But we were still using it as a model. It was only a question whether the model yields 60 to 1 or 100 to 1, right? But how did we have a right to use it as a model? The same reason that Rabbi Yehuda could not use this as a model to teach me the din of Min B'Minayit Batil is a perfectly powerful reason for us not to use this as a model for the shear of Shishim or of Mea. Correct? So the whole sugya now breaks down. We come out in the end by explaining why this is not useful as a model, but the whole sugya used it as a model for Bar Kappara. So for Rabbi Yehuda, it's not a model, and for Bar Kappara, it is a model. How do you explain that? So, Iachi Lemea Vishishim Nami Lo Nigmar, why are we using something that is a chiddush, which means it's not useful as a model, as our model? Now, this is Rashi's biggest raya, that when it says shishim, or mea in the case of Bar Kappara, it's only a chumra. And it's telling me that even if there's no tam, you still need mea or shishim. Because the Gemara's answer is, otu, anan lekula gamrina? Obviously, we couldn't use a chiddush to be mekel, because the Torah is being mekel as a chiddush, and that is exactly what makes it a chiddush. Whoever heard of being mevatel itzur lechatchila? But we're not using this as a model to be mekel in any way. On the contrary, we're using it lechumra. And we're saying that even though the Torah normally says that you go acharei rabim, you're supposed to go acharei rabim la'atot, which would mean that if you have rov of one, that the other one is batel. And we're saying, oh, no, dear me, you cannot rely on a rove. You need 60 to 1 or 100 to 1. I mean, that's like a major chumra. And if even in a model, which is spectacularly makel, because it allows you to go and be mevatel lechatchila, even there, where the Torah is being makel, it demands 60 to 1 or 100 to 1. So because of that, we're saying, so we can use that as a model for cases that are not a chiddush by being machmir and not being mekel. That's the point. So even though, fine, it may be that according to Rabbi Yehuda, min b'mino lo batel, and none of this would apply in other cases, but for us, it would apply. And even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it still would apply to min b'she'eno mino. Because min b'she'eno mino could now, we derive from here, that we're going to be machmer, requiring either 60 to 1 or 100 to 1, based on the El Nazir. Now, this raises, I hope you have followed through till now. It's a little bit complicated, the back and forth. So, maybe let me first give a review before I point out the problem that we just run up against. So again, starting from the beginning of this, what we learned today is that prior to the definition of the Shira of Shishim, there were different approaches among the Chachmei. These were Tanoim. This was talking about Rebbe and Rebbe's children. So there, they were experimenting with different Shirim. Possibly 43 we raised to 1, 45 to 1, 47 to 1. And we ended up, in the end, rejecting all of those other possibilities, and we settled on what we know at the end of the period of the Gemara was 60 to 1. But early on, very early on, still at the time of Rebbe, there was Bar Kapora. And Bar Kapora looked at this concept of 60, not as the way that the Rabbonin were Meshayer taste, and he looked at it as a deraisa. Looking at it as a deraisa, we have two versions of what it is that he derived from the pasuk that was the deraisa. One version had Bar Kapora saying 60, the shear of 60 to 1 is a shear in the Torah. And the other had Bar Kapora saying that bittul takes place only as 100 to 1, and that that's in the Torah. So, what we ended up doing is recognizing that the marker of Bar Kapora, according to both versions, is the same marker. We have an unusual case of the El Nazir, in which the Torah says part of the El Nazir is Truma, and the rest of it is Atchulin, but the rest of it is Kachin Kalim, that is Mutter Frizorim, right? So now the question is, if that's the case, how did the Torah say to cook it all together? Obviously, there's enough there to be mevatel the taste of the truma, meaning the zrah b'shela, in the rest of the shloni. Now, the only question was, what's the proportion? Well, if the proportion is we analyze how much meat in the animal as a whole, connected how much meat there is in a foreleg, there's very little muscle in a foreleg, it's mostly bone, and therefore we end up to 100 to 1 as the proportion. So there's 100 times more meat than there is meat in a foreleg. This yields a Menachem Sklar finally falling asleep and giving up, but he's back. So the other way of looking at it is that actually you got to measure the entire contents of the foreleg, connected the animal, and that gives you 60 to 1. So those were the two approaches of Bar Kapora. Everything was fine. Now we raise the problem. And the problem was, but wait a minute. The Braita says that the case of the El Nazir is an absolutely unique case because it says, Zehu hetra b'michwalis. Now, however we know that, it certainly seems to be saying that it is useless to take this case as a model because it is a chiddush. It's different than any other case. So how are you using it, Bar Kapora, as a model? So one approach is to fall asleep as Rabbanea did and just simply, he's back. Look at that. So when you wake up, you realize... When you wake up, you realize that this was not supposed to be used as a model. So how did Bar Kapora use it as a model? So one answer to that was, well, it only meant you can't use it as a model according to Reb Yehuda, because one of the things that you would have had to learn from it if you do use it as a model is obviously that you can be mevatel meat in meat, but that's min b'minai. And Reb Yehuda sheet all over is, min b'mino is not batul. So we had to point out that according to Reb Yehuda, this is not a model for that din, a min b'mino. Then we got into a side discussion. Well, how does he know? Maybe it is the model, right? And we said, well, you can't make a model out of a violation of normative halach. So since over here, mir mevatel yisur v'chatchila, where you have a mitzvah to be mevatel v'chatchila, that's not found anywhere else in the Torah, and therefore this is a weird case, and weird cases are not meant as models. Okay. Now that leads us to a question, an obvious question at this moment. And that question is, if you're telling me that this is a non-normative case, and how do I know it's a non-normative case? Just from the fact that we're mevatel isur lechatchila, right? So then maybe that's why we said in the Braita, oh, this case is unusual. Zeh hetera ba mechlal isur. Not because it has anything to do with min b'mino. It's unusual because it is saying that you can be mevatel isur lechatchila. Why don't we just say that? Isn't that a very easy way to understand? Oh, man, this is an unusual case. Why is it unusual? Is it unusual because of min b'mino, because of shishim, because of meya? No, it's unusual because of the very fact that the Torah told us to be mevatel isur lechatchila. Now, there you go. You have a very simple explanation in a braita. You don't have to get into this whole question of min b'mino, and all of the discussion was then irrelevant. Right? That's what immediately comes to mind. So, of course, Tosfos asks this question. And Tosfos says, the reason that we don't say that is because the language is heter haba michlal iser. And since it says this is unique, zero heter haba michlal iser, it doesn't say this is unique shematirin heter be iser. So obviously it's not the bittul of lechatchila that's the issue. It's the issue of the actual fact that it's mutter b'achila. So it has to do with the shear of bittul. That's all. It's just simply a language question. Okay. Now, let's just finish our discussion. So now the question is, if we're determined that this is an unusual case, because it's a chiddush, so then the Gemara said, so if it's unusual, what right did Bar Kapara have, since it's a chiddush and it violates dinim, how can we use it to derive the case of mea for echad or shishim for echad? It should not serve as a model for that either. And on that, the Gemara answers, Oto anan lakula gamrina? We're not learning a kula from a chiddush that was lakula. We're learning a chumra from a chiddush that was lakula. And we're saying that even, and this is, as I said, this is Rashi's Raya, even in the event that you don't have any taste, you still are going to need the extra 60 to 1 or 100 to 1. And that is a tremendous chumra. And that is what Bar Kapara was raising. Whew. Okay. I hope that we'll have to stop here because we're about to start an amazing new sugya tomorrow, which will open up many, many new doors and many, many new questions. But meanwhile, we're jugging along. And what we have found is that before the Rabbanan were koveya this year of Shishim, there was an early attempt to define a shear of either shishim or mea as a diraisa rather than as an analysis of what is considered to be a valid tam, in which case we would be utilizing it even lakula. We don't need to have a kapila. We don't need to worry about whether something is discernible by a connoisseur. We only need to look at shishim, which is, of course, Tosus Ashita. Okay, we've got a Richie here. Richie, looks like he's got some very fascinating questions. He's muted. So, but since Richie has taught us to be expert lip readers, he keeps saying, read my lips. For some reason, he's into taxes. I don't know why.
Rabbi.
I don't know why taxes play such a role in Richie's life. Apparently, he's a friar. That's the only way to look at it. And that he cannot deny.
Or the ram. Not a ram in a long, long time.
Ah, but you have a moose. There's a moose. A moose in the front yard.
You know, that's very funny. My kids went out last night, and they saw 5 moose, including a young male.
Wow.
But they go on a game drive. There's a farm not far from where we are.
Wow.
And it seems like the moose like to hang around there.
So it's definitely moose.
He doesn't shoot them.
It's moose and not meese. That's for sure.
Moose with a couple of youngins.
Very nice.
Very exciting for them.
No,
I don't go out anymore.
It's been a long time.
We leave the moose on Shabbos.
But, well, we don't. We leave the moose on Shabbos to keep their own, you know.
So anyway, remember, Moshe Reuven, he tangles with bears, not with moose. But they can be even sometimes, not always, sometimes more dangerous than moose. Moose are pretty dangerous.
Wolves, no bears, wolves.
No, Andy has got a problem with bears in that forest, but let's hear what his question is.
Rashi said that when there's no ta'am, we have this form that we have, Parashishim or man to be mubatla, correct?
Yes.
So the alternative would be nothing or Rove?
Rove. Like we say, normally Beruba Batil, and now we have this Chumrah. We're going to raise this issue tomorrow in the discussion of Tam Ki'ikr. Because what you are raising is the question of whether Rove has anything to do with Tam. Is there a din of Rove in Tam, or is Rove only a question of Yavesh B'Yavesh? These are the complex issues for tomorrow's daf, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, gentlemen, it's been tons of fun, and we look forward to even more fun. And maybe problems, moose, bears, kosher things mixed with non-kosher things, and all types of other excitement, kachim and chulin, and wow-wee. Just the type of daf that Richie loves, so he's probably going to be here early tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. See you all.
Are there any volunteers who will come here and check a moose? It's not a moose, it's not the moose, but the deer, which are much more numerous. To come and so we can eat venison here. I mean, that would be nice,
but first you got to catch him.
Small problem.
But we do have some of the Sheikh Demir expert archers, and if you got some very sharpened arrows.
You just cut the.
That's the Gemara before. All we need is some expert archers besides Sheikh Demir. Kol Tov, everyone. It's lovely to be with you.